This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, after a week in a time period of a lot of serious topics, we thought a Friday with sunshine deserved something a little different. A Wine in the Umpqua program today. Dyson DeBara, thanks for coming in.
Hey, my pleasure, and wine is serious stuff, Kyle. I want you to know.
It is serious, but it's a little lighter than some of the other things we've been covering in recent days. And in fact, it just so happens, I didn't realize this till you brought it up, tomorrow is National Malbec Day. So I would get your take on what makes a great Malbec.
Oh, what makes great Malbec? Well, maybe to start with a little bit of the history of Malbec. Malbec is considered one of the really great, great world-class varieties, even though in America we have more of a recent interpretation or understanding of it. Classically, in Europe, Malbec was famous in Bordeaux. A lot of people don't know this, but Bordeaux, France, it's known for Cabernet and Merlot today. Malbec is the base variety that region became famous with. In the 1900s, because of an insect called phylloxera, a lot of the vineyards were replanted to these other varieties, but was considered a world-class, incredible grape. Most of the wines produced in Europe were along rivers, so because wine was so heavy, wine was shipped via, let's say, Napoleon built them, aqueducts, canals kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, rivers and that. And so only the greatest wines would be loaded on a wagon, because a wagon would be crushed by a couple barrels of wine. So there were wines that were called the wines of Cahors, the black wines of Cahors, that the French nobility drank at the foot of the Pyrenees. And those wines were taken by wagon to Bordeaux, put on ships, and taken back up into Paris and that kind of thing. So it's considered a world-class variety that, because it's low-yielding, fell out of favor a little bit. The Argentinians picked up on it in the mid-18th century, or late 1800s, and made a name for, more modern, I should say, but made a name for that grape variety. Well, it's something that guy, Richard Summers, the father of Oregon wine, and the gentleman that really gave birth to what we consider to be wine in Oregon, who started Hillcrest, that my wife and I have, are proprietors of, he came up from California and brought 35 varieties, and this is also the 60th anniversary of his first planting. So the first planting ever of Pinot Noir in the state of Oregon was here in Umpqua Valley out at Hillcrest. Well, he happened at the same time to plant 34 other varieties, one of which was Malbec. And Malbec is, it's an avalanche of interest domestically, nationwide, in the Malbecs that are being produced here in Umpqua, as well as a little farther south. And this morning we were on TV up in Portland with it. I've been in touch with, you know, a lot of wine writers nationwide, and that Forbes magazine did a little write-up on our Malbec in this. But it's a variety that it's very complex. It has this beautiful, like, elderberry fruit and spice, but super rich, but elegant. And it really is a great match. You don't know when you plant an area. You really don't know. There's what you think will do well, but time will tell you and nature will speak through the grape. And it's something that I think is a no-brainer. A person that's very high ranking within the Oregon wine industry here recently and represents the state of Oregon said perhaps Malbec might be the number two grape in Oregon soon in terms of its reputation, Pinot Noir being the first.
Wow. And it's amazing because it was a number, as I began to learn about wine a number of years ago, I knew almost nothing. When I started, it was a while before I actually heard of Malbec. It didn't seem like it was one of the big ones.
Yeah, there's 4,000 to 8,000 grape varieties in the world, depending on who you talk to. So there's 250 that are widely dispersed around the world that produce great wine, at least in one area. And of those, Malbec is definitely in the top 10, 20. But it is a variety in modern times because it's low yielding, is used as a blender many places. So it's used to fix other things. But as a standalone variety here, it is like a perfect match with Umpqua Valley. This wine, I was telling you a little bit earlier about the Oregon Wine Board did their first Zoom tasting, and this is a few months ago, where they took 200 wine writers here in the nation. We sent in three cases of a particular wine they selected, which was a Malbec 2013, and they had a company in a very anaerobic environment break down 750, so a regular size wine bottle, into 187s, and there were tasting packs that were put out to these 200 wine writers, and then we did a guided tasting. And on the back end of that, And this was the only wine out of Umpqua Valley and the only Malbec out of Oregon. It's just been, like I said, a tidal wave of interest. And it's so interesting that usually you put things out there that are meant to be kind of unusual, people don't expect, and maybe a couple people bite onto it. But it's something that there was a taste in the glass that every one of those people, it rang the bell. And I still have people 2 months later writing me, looking for information, wanting to write articles and that. And so, you know, Umpqua Valley has so much diversity. I say it's like Russian River. You can grow this huge range of grape varieties, but there are certain things that just speak to you. And it's much like I say in your backyard, if you buy a house and you want to grow this and that, and you grow 10 other things, there's always one plant out there that you could spray it with Roundup, but it'd still be the strongest growing thing in the backyard. And so the question is, what is that in Umpqua Valley? And I think Malbec might be that.
So how many vineyards around this area are growing Malbec?
Yeah, not that many. We don't have that much acreage. So the whole state of Oregon, it's actually grown in every appellation within Oregon. I think we're like 280 acres total of Malbec. So that would be like the Walla Walla. Part of that appellation is in Oregon, so the Eastern Cascade side. There's some in Hood River. There's some in the Willamette, the Rogue, and Umpqua Valley. Umpqua Valley has 77 acres, and I know of six different properties that it's planted on. We source also with Paul O'Brien. We source some Malbec down south in that. So there's plantings down there that are actually a little bit more significant than Umpqua Valley. But there's something very magic about Malbec in Umpqua Valley in particular that makes it really stand out.
So 280 acres for all that area.
Yeah, for the whole state of Oregon. People forget, you know, we talk about Oregon. There are a lot of things that seem big in people's minds and they're small. So I always say, like, if you go to an average restaurant, you never tell anybody about it. You might go there once a month for your whole life. You never talk about it. If you go to French Laundry in Napa Valley one time, you probably tell 250 people in your life. So based on how you've talked about it, it seems like French Laundry is this massive restaurant. Same thing is true with other things, and grapes would be that way. So to put this in perspective, Napa Valley produces 3% of the wine in the state of California. There's about 60,000 acres of grapes. The whole state of Oregon, once again, Walla Walla East Side, the part that falls into Oregon, the Gorge, Willamette Valley, Rogue Valley, Umpqua Valley, 38,000 acres. We're not even two-thirds of what Napa Valley is. And once again, it only represents 3% of the wine produced in California. So there's just a little bit. What's interesting, if you look at pricing, is the price that people are willing to pay. It's the second most expensive grape in Oregon, Cabernet being first because there's very little of it grown, and then Malbec is number two. So there's a recognition, and it's one of these things, you know, with Paul O'Brien, we've scouted Malbec different places and that. And I mean, there were vineyards that just they worked to try to sell that fruit year after year, and it always found a home in that. And boy, in the last 6 months, it's on fire. You cannot find, you know, not only a grape, but you can't find a new Malbec plant to stick in the ground.
So what are some of the different varietals in the Umpqua Valley? Where do you think we're headed in terms of what's going to be more popular or prevalent?
Yeah, I think, well, so there's two really beautiful things. One is the diversity of nature. We have such fantastic range of soils and climate conditions that you can really do a lot of things. So I don't think that any longer we're going to limit ourselves to one. So, but there will be one thing that stands out. You know, Napa Valley grows a lot of other things, Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay, Pinot, Merlot, Zinfandel, Sangiovese, but Cabernet reigns supreme. If you go to Europe and you walk into a wine shop and you say Napa Valley, everybody will tell you Cabernet Sauvignon. So at some point we're going to have that here. Those varieties, I mean, part of the interest in Umpqua Valley is that there are so many people from so many different backgrounds that have walked into this area and have their vision or their dream of what they want to do. And we've seen that with Spanish varieties. We've seen it with French varieties, different regions, cool climate French, warm climate French and that. And so I think probably the most interesting thing for me right now in terms of a general group are Italian varietals. We've seen some really stunning results. I planted in 2001 when I came up here a grape variety called Teraldigo, which is, you know, in 1980, there were like 500 acres of it in the world in northern Italy. That's a variety now. There's a few other people. Mark Girardet grows it and makes it into wine and that, but it's a super interesting variety here. So I don't think we're going to limit ourselves, and I actually don't think that the world wants one variety anymore. I think the trade wants one variety, but consumers like walking in, and it's one of the powers of like North Coast California and here in Umpqua Valley, is that you can walk in and taste like six or eight different varieties. Most great winemaking regions of the world, if you go to Burgundy, France, you taste Pinot Noir or you taste Chardonnay. That's it. You don't like it, you've got to get in your car and drive a couple hours. You want to go to the Mosel Valley of Germany or go to the Rheingau, it's the same thing. There's one grape variety out there made in six different styles. So that diversity is a beautiful, beautiful thing, and we should embrace it and own it.
Back with more in a moment. Wine of the Umpqua, Dyson DeMara, the podcast after one at 541radio.com. 12:45 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 12:48. Lars Larson coming at 1. It's Inside Douglas County and a Wine in the Empire program, Dyson Damara. So what is the past year for you? I mean, you've got multiple properties, different things, but then 12 months ago, we get this COVID-19 situation. What has the last year been like? How has it changed your business and kind of the wine business in the region in particular?
Well, actually, this is the first time I've been to town in a year. I'm not too sure what you're talking about. Oh, boy. I'm not sure. This radio station will be around long enough to talk about it. It's been crazy, as it has for everybody in everybody's life, and that. It's been a great challenge in many, many ways for winery owners, vineyards, winemaking. It's also been an incredible blessing in many, many ways. I mean, there are many things that happened in life that, never would have happened with what went down. I'll give you a quick example in our personal case is that our daughter, who was graduated from winemaking school in Italy, Hannah, was going to work for 3 or 4 years different parts of the world. And she was about a year plus into that. And she was down in Argentina working harvest down in the very south end of Patagonia. And all this went down and they just finished crushing their last grapes and they're getting ready to lock down the country. So we were blessed to have her come spend like 6 months with us as an adult without a spouse or anything like that. And to really spend some adult time, and that was really an incredibly great thing. But the business side of things is interesting. So business side of things, there are wineries out there, and I say, when I say this, I'm going to say West Coast wineries, so California, Oregon, Washington, that had the greatest year they ever had by light years in 2020. There are also people feeling incredible, incredible pain. And so if you look at it, people that had either a really, really strong tie to their customers and a local customer base, which we're blessed with here in Umpqua Valley for sure. People had a strong tie or had incredible distribution, killed it. I mean, downtown at Paul O'Brien, we could have sold probably 2 or 3 times the amount of wine that we did. We were in 35 states at that point, and you just couldn't put enough on the shelf. But what that meant is people weren't going to the wineries as much, and especially if you're impacted into an area. So Napa Valley, we talked about a little bit earlier, Napa Valley, they said, 65% of the wine sold in Napa are direct to consumer, which means consumers come to visit the winery, take some home, maybe join the wine club, get shipped kind of thing. So if you don't have that international traffic to buy $100, $150 bottles of wine, you don't go down to the street to the wine shop because the wine shop's not going to have 500, $150 bottles of wine on the shelf. And so they say the stat that I read within Napa Valley is direct to consumer sales were down 88%. It's really, really hard to make up that revenue. Small wineries, we had a super strong year last year, and thank you to all those out there that supported us. But I know a lot of us here in Umpqua Valley were super blessed. I mean, the first time we closed down, I mean, we sold more wine the day after. And it was kind of one of those things. People went to Costco for toilet paper, and they went to wineries for wine, and they were buying. People would be in for 2 minutes and buy 2 cases kind of thing. And so, coming out of this, so there are a lot of people that are serious wine drinkers classified at this point, or advanced amateurs, as the English trade would say. But anyway, I'd say that was great. We ran through some challenges when it comes to vineyards. And that we had, issues with people commuting 15 in a van kind of thing, and, porta potties and sanitation and this kind of thing. But that's all been worked through at this point, and things are go, and we're ready, like, the rest of the world to kind of move on to whatever comes beyond this. But I'd say, there were changes that were taking place, online sales, distribution we talk about, that those things were probably accelerated 10 years in a very short period of time. And so I think that more than anything is, even though we joke the second oldest occupation in the world, you have to be dynamic and you have to be able to react and change. And as Americans, we're very good at that.
What's the biggest news in wine around the Umpqua that no one knows about?
Yeah, this is something, sometimes the biggest things, they just get lost. And something I wanted to bring up, because people always, and I think you've even asked me this before, Kyle, is like, what does the rest of the world think of Umpqua Valley? Does anybody in Colorado know Umpqua Valley, or somebody in the trade in Florida? How is image created and how is that story told? And, you know, a handful of wineries here really sell outside of Umpqua Valley and really sell outside of the state. It's really hard to get anybody to taste your wine, especially with everything happening today. Distributors don't want to taste it. They don't need another wine in that. We've been super successful down at Paul O'Brien, and we've been able to, we attracted one of the very, very top international wine sales and marketing firms. And so, you know, for many years we tried to sell. We went out and we opened doors one at a time. When COVID hit, that basically shut that down. We were approached by a company that's been in business for 52 years. It's a family-owned company out of Virginia that has a portfolio of grade A super famous wines, Italian wines, that have 18 people across the country that are top people in their business, that have connections to top restaurants, top retailers, take us on board. And so now we're in 50 states. They're also into Asia. They're into Canada. We look at that. But the most important thing is you have people that have the right relationships. And this is priceless. I mean, there's really almost nobody I know of even in Oregon, let alone Umpqua Valley, that have this. You've got 18 people that have the best of the best contacts, restaurant, retail, distribution, telling the story of Umpqua Valley every day. And that's what creates image. So for the first time, people are going to see that. They're going to be able to taste those wines, and that's great for Umpqua Valley. So that's how, when people wonder, how do you reach out into the rest of the world? It's one thing to sell here in Umpqua Valley. It's another thing to sell in Oregon. It's a really another thing to sell in the rest of the world. You think about the global competition. Every time you go into the grocery store, wine shop, you see all these wines you don't know. It's murder trying to get that. Earl was in, I think last week, he did the Friday show, and he was talking about that they tried to push into more states and they had to pull back to, I think it was five states or whatever. It is absolutely brutal. How do you get somebody to carry your product when they won't even taste your product?
Wow. Another thing, for the past year, you are known for going back and forth to Europe pretty often in a year, and you probably haven't been doing that.
Yeah. We have like an Italian day at the house. We start with breakfast, a little espresso, and yeah, it's been tough in that regard. We make wine in five places in Europe, five different countries, and of course that's gone by the wayside. A couple of those areas I'm able to ship wines in and taste and do blends and send things back and that, but it's one of those things, you have to be there, smell it, taste it, and do it. And so a lot of that has been put on hold, as it is for everybody. And we hope that this year, you know, we're going to get in. We're working on a new project a little farther east than we normally work. And so hopefully in the next year, or hopefully in the next 6 months, we'll be on the ground doing some things. We've got a daughter right now that's, she's over in Africa. She's married to an Italian guy. And so she'll be going back through Italy. And so she's going to help us out a little bit with some of that stuff. But it's time, and that's part of the price to be paid.
Now, you obviously are very busy around this area. What are you looking at in terms of the various properties and things you have here in the next year or so?
Yeah. In the next year, just trying to keep up with my life kind of thing. But this incredible launch down at Paul O'Brien, the nationwide launch, Scott, my partner and friend down there, who's the O'Brien part of the Paul O'Brien, he and I are doing launches on Zoom, basically, on calls and that with sales and marketing teams and that. So that's going to be a big push to make sure that story is the right story and we tell the story of Umpqua Valley and the power of the nature that's here. That's truly incredible. Out at Hillcrest, it's bringing our daughter in when she can come back and working with her and trying to pass on, you know, wines, especially in a small winery like we are, where my wife and I do everything inside the winery in terms of wine production. They're really a reflection of one person. There's an old saying that in water, one sees one's reflection, but in wine, one sees the heart of another. And so trying to bring our daughter on and show her kind of our way and our vision and our dream, and then letting her kind of explore and kind of add her fingerprint to it. We've also got, Pazzo Colina, we've made some Italian varietals amongst other things off of the old Misty Oaks property in Oakland, and we were going to open that before all this craziness happened. So at some point that will happen. Right now I'm pouring a Pazzo Colina wine out at Hillcrest right now. It's just kind of an introduction. And then we recently took over the old Tesoraria winery, which kind of put a new spin on that one and kind of, you know, new directions and positive things and that. And so that's a vineyard that we're working on right now. The plans for that long term, we really don't have any plans to do a winery out there, but some vineyard and a place on the river. And I come from a farming background. My dad was a rice grower down in California. And so having a little bit of river bottom with some water rights and stuff is just very interesting to me.
So obviously you have a lot of free time.
Yeah, exactly. I do what I do, kind of like Richard Summers. I take a day at a time, and I'm super, super blessed. I've had great people teach me what they know, and now I'm to the point I'm still trying to learn but trying to share as well.
All right, Dyson DeMara, we could list off all the places he has, but we'd run out of time. So thanks for coming in for Wine in the Umpqua, 1258 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.